Chapter 53. January 11th of year 19. Timber! I call through the forest. Adam and Eve are standing behind me, and the tree will fall forward. But to me, the warning still seems appropriate. At first, the giant trunk ahead of us just trembles slightly. It does not seem to realize I severed it with a clean cut all the way through. The cut surface is angled slightly forward, so that the tree has to topple in that direction. It took me 2 hours to cut all the way through the trunk. The reason for this was due to the mass of the tree, which pressed from above against the cut and my self-made saw. This high pressure merges the tree's just separated cells, as the material seems to have self-healing features. My cutting only worked after I started to cover the severed areas with an impermeable synthetic cloth. From that moment on, the self-healing no longer worked, and I finally made some progress. Now the trunk is starting to move. Down here it is only a few millimeters, but the top of the tree, 210 meters high, is already noticeably tilting. For a moment, it looks as if the leaves could prevent the fall by interlacing with those of other trees. But once this falling giant gets going, nothing can stop it. The tree simply tears off the leaves of its neighbors. However, I do not think this could cause a domino effect. In addition, I calculated the fall in such a way that our tree has a free path. We will need all of its wood for the base, for supporting the side walls, and for the ceilings. The timber of one tree should be enough, but if it becomes entangled in another specimen, it would make cutting it up much more difficult. While the mighty treetop moves downward, the tree seems to fall in slow motion. For a moment, we see the sky that is covered by clouds today. A few seconds later, some raindrops hit me, but the free space is soon closed when the leaves of the neighboring trees spring back into their normal position. Ordinarily, the rain never gets down here, and this will not change either. A strange excitement is sweeping through the forest. Or am I only imagining it? Did you hear that noise? Eve asks. I notice that there is a high-frequency humming in the air, which reminds me of the sound made by an electric fence.
Yes, how strange, Adam says.
I analyze the sound digitally. Perhaps it is created by the trunk moving through the air faster and faster, like the whirring of a propeller or a sword swung with great force. But then the volume should follow a pattern. It is barely audible, yet the high-pitched noise consists of individual sections, syllables in a way. Could the tree be uttering sounds? Now the noise fades again, and it lasted too briefly to determine if it really contained a kind of meaning. Talking trees? Or simply a coincidence? Perhaps the tree leaves moved during the descent in such a way that they contributed to the whirring sound and gave the impression of a rising and falling volume. That must have been the sound of the falling tree, I say. The trunk reaches a considerable speed. We hear a loud crash, and the branches that the leaves are attached to break under the force of the impact. A dull thud follows, making the forest floor vibrate, and I can measure it. Get to safety, I warn them, because parts of the branches and leaves are flying sideways. Luckily, none of them come in our direction. When everything has calmed down again, we walk past the fallen tree, now lying on the forest floor like a foreign substance. It makes sense that there is no underbrush, as not enough light reaches down here. However, shouldn't a tree occasionally reach its age limit, die, topple, and finally decompose? Living beings cannot exist forever. The clean forest floor indicates the trees all grew skyward at about the same time, like on a tree farm. Were they planted? Eve brushes her hand against the bark of the tree. It's really smooth, she says. The structure remains unusually uniform, even as we approach the treetop. The trunk must always have been free of branches here. Only 20 meters from the top, we find the first leaf node. What I believe to be branches from below are more like stalks. The single leaves are directly attached to the trunk. Their attachment points are distributed around the trunk in a helical pattern. One stalk is 4 or 5 meters long, followed by a leaf of a similar length and a width of 1 meter, which broadens toward the outside. Strange construction, Adam remarks. This distribution only makes sense if we imagine an entire canopy of such leaves, I reply, pointing at the area between leaf and trunk. The leaves of the neighboring trees fill the gaps appearing near the trunk, and at the same time, the treetops support each other. But there are way too many leaves,
The lowest ones don't get any light. Adam is right. The uppermost leaves should be able to block the view of the sky completely. The lower ones seem useless. Nature is never wasteful, I reply. Let us take a look. The solution must be here, right in front of our eyes. I do not see anything unusual about the stalks of the leaves. Then I look at the spot where the stalk is attached to the trunk. Above and below each stalk, there are barely recognizable flat notches. Eve, could you please raise this leaf here? Eve is puzzled by my request, but she follows it. Look here! I point at the attachment of the stalk. My suspicions have been confirmed. The trees can distribute their leaves at random around the trunk. They're swiveling. This would allow them to compensate for lost leaves. Since all of the leaves look weathered to the same degree, each tree seems to consciously expose each leaf to the sun for some time. A clever method for optimizing energy yield. Since this place has neither nights nor winters, the leaves must get a different opportunity to rest and recuperate. Not bad, Adam says. A tree with movable leaves. We gather one of the fallen leaves and take it to our camp. Afterward, I start to turn the trunk into planking.